case of the day, All Energy versus Trempealeau County, 15AP491. Council, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
Please do.
May it please the court, council. My name is Gary Van Cleve, and I'm arguing on behalf of All Energy Corporation and All Energy Silica Arcadia, LLC. We're here today to ask the court to reverse the Trempealeau County Environment and Land Use Committee's denial of a conditional use permit for non-metallic mining, because the ELUC, and that's how I refer to this quasi-judicial body in this argument, the ELUC exercised its will and not its judgment, and it did it in two ways. The ELUC denied the conditional use permit based solely on subjective standards. So their argument is that All Energy has the burden of proving that it is entitled to the permit. Yet they say that the county's ordinance has subjective standards, which they say in their own brief at page 44, are impossible for an applicant to unilaterally satisfy. Because no applicant can disprove the impact of its project on the subjective standards, no applicant can ever meet that burden of proof. Accordingly, ELUC is saying that the county ordinance gives it the right to be arbitrary. Secondly, the ELUC argues that substantial evidence supports its denial. But they want to rely on unqualified lay opinions to support denial of the permit, and they want to do that in the face of expert opinions from All Energy showing compliance with legal requirements. And they want to do that despite an expert conclusion from ELUC's own consulting engineering expert, paid for by All Energy, that the application complies with local, state, and federal regulations.
Is it your position that if you show compliance, they have to grant you the conditional use permit? There's no discretion. You meet these standards, you got to get it. Is that your position?
Justice Abramson, if there is no substantial evidence to support the denial, then yes, the permit must issue.
And is it your position that lay people testifying doesn't constitute substantial evidence?
It may, but not in this case.
When may it? What kind of evidence would they have to been?
This is a case that involves, this was a 215-page conditional use permit application. It required All Energy to hire engineering experts and environmental scientists in order to meet the criteria in the CUEP application, in order to show the ELUC that it was going to be able to conduct these operations without doing environmental harm, and that it was able to conduct the operations by meeting all objective standards. Mm-hmm. So, and again, we don't have any countervailing expert evidence in this case.
Well, counsel, are you expecting members of the public to retain the same kinds of experts that All Energy retained?
Justice Kelly, as I was about to say, the ELUC had its own expert here. They hired an engineering consulting firm, which they have a right to do. And in our reply brief, we cite to a web link of their application, which indicates that the ELUC has the right to require the applicant to pay for an independent expert that they hire in order to help them review the application.
So yes. is your position that that if there is to be countervailing testimony, it needs to come from the county's expert or relevant lay testimony?
Yes, Your Honor, that would be our position. The problem here is that the lay statements, which were the only evidence at the public hearing, were in the form of uncorroborated hearsay, unsubstantiated fears, and conjecture and speculation, none of which constitute substantial evidence under this court's authorities of Oneida 7, the Gayen case, and the folding furniture case.
Is this quasi-legislative, quasi-judicial, or none of the above?
It's a quasi-judicial proceeding, right. Justice Abramson. And that's one of the...
Where does it say the rules of evidence apply? It's an administrative kind of hearing. Where does it say rules of evidence apply?
Justice Abramson, the rules of evidence do not apply.
So we don't have to worry about hearsay.
Well, we do have to worry about uncorroborated hearsay as being the sole basis for a decision.
Why? You don't think that's substantial evidence? Is that what you're talking
about? It is not, and that is what this court has held. This court has held that in folding
furniture.
I just
wanted to know what your reasoning was. Okay.
And Gahan and Oneida 7. We submit that this can't be the law. It can't be the law that a quasi-judicial body can rely solely on subjective generalized standards to deny a conditional use permit when that applicant has shown that it has met all of the objective standards under the ordinance. And there was an extensive ordinance in this case that was adopted by the legislative body of the County Board of Supervisors.
Mr. Van Cleef, doesn't the entire concept of a conditional use permit vest in the county some measure of discretion in determining whether a particular use is going to be granted on that property?
It absolutely does.
What is the type of discretion they are allowed to exercise?
It is not unfettered. And I will say that the argument made by ELUC here is at bottom an argument that they have unfettered discretion because of these subjective standards. Their discretion is circumscribed by the conditions in the ordinance. They have the duty to act as a quasi-judicial body, not as a policy-making body. And that was the problem here. We had a quasi-judicial body that had that acted based upon public opinion, strident public opinion opposing this, saying we have too many minds in this county. But that's not the role of the quasi-judicial body. I think it's important for the court, in looking at this case, it's really important to understand the difference between the legislative authority in a county, which is the county board, and the quasi-judicial authority, which in this county is a body called the ELUC. And that legislative body is the body that gets to promulgate what the ordinances say. And in this county, what the Trempealeau County Board did is say, yes, we're going to allow non-metallic mining, but you've got to meet all these conditions in Chapter 13. Now, I will grant you there are both objective standards and subjective standards, and ELUC clings only to the subjective standards here.
Are you saying it's inappropriate to have subjective standards? They must all be objective?
That's a difficult question. I think that you can have some subjective standards, but the problem comes in a case like this. What is the applicant supposed to do in order to know how they're going to meet the requirements of the ordinance if the quasi-judicial body is going to rely solely on subjective standards?
Well, what are the subjective standards here? Tell me which one are objective and which one are subjective.
I will tell you, Justice Abramson, the subjective standards that the ELUC specifically relied on here were these. They relied on change in character of the area, whether the use will adversely affect natural beauty, supporting agriculture over mining, preferring recreation over mining, and not the best use of natural resources.
What about dirt? I mean, there was testimony that if you hung out laundry, it came back dirtier than when you put it out. Is that subjective or objective or irrelevant?
It's irrelevant, Your Honor. It's a lay opinion that is talking about
I have an expert opinion. I mean, I've done a lot of washes. This person has done a lot of washes and put them out. And she says it gets dirty. Or he says it gets dirty.
Justice Abramson, the reason I say that that's irrelevant is because there are objective standards for dust control under the ordinance which were met. If that is an issue, maybe then you go to the county board and you say, you know what, you need to dial down those or ratchet up those standards.
What about noise?
Noise, same thing. There are objective standards. And we can't lose sight of the fact that in addition to all of the ordinance-based standards, there were 37 additional conditions that were attached to this permit, which ultimately didn't get issued.
Mr. Van Cleve, one thing that was a pleasant surprise to me when I read the briefs in these matters and what I missed from the governor's State of the State address yesterday, which I had the pleasure of attending along with all of my colleagues, is the excellent, in fact, almost unparalleled quality of basilica in our great state. And so that was a tremendous education for me and something I think we can all be proud of. But it seems to me that a lot of your objections, when you talk about lay opinion and hearsay, and I understand the framework that you're setting up with the expert testimony versus the members of the public who appeared at the hearing, it seems a lot of that, as you answered to Justice Abrahamson, the rules of evidence don't apply, but if they did, a lot of it would go sort of to the weight of the evidence as opposed to its admissibility. In other words, I'm thinking to myself as I'm reading through the briefs, where do we draw the line? If someone had a bad, if a member of the public had a bad experience somewhere else where they lived in close proximity to a sand mine, do we as a court say that unless you have an expert qualified, as were the all energy experts qualified, then that is not something the county can consider? What I'm getting at is this. It seems to me, as I worked through your argument, that you're almost asking us to set up not a statutory scheme, but a common law scheme for when a county must grant a conditional use permit for sand mines. And the thought occurred, we've had cases here involving development of the dairy industry, in which there is legislation that affects all 72 counties of the state that the legislature has passed to sort of encourage the dairy industry. We certainly have the cranberry growers are protected by statute. Does it seem to you, as it does to me, that that's what you're asking us to do, to write sort of a rule about when the county must grant the permit for a sand mine, and is that something that would be better off for the legislature to do, because they would have the resources to conduct the hearings and take the testimony? If that's going to be the policy of the state, then they're the policy-making organ. We're just the law enforcement organ.
That's a fair question, Justice Gableman. And I don't think that we're asking this court to legislate how to process sand mine applications. This is broader than simply conditional use permits for sand mines. This affects every conditional use permit deliberation by a quasi-judicial body in the state of Wisconsin. And there need to be some clearer rules on how those bodies address these, because by their very nature, conditional uses are uses that the legislative body has determined may have some negative impacts that could affect other uses and that need to be controlled. And that's why they are not permitted uses.
I agree with you. I see your point. And what you're saying, what's going unsaid, what's implicit in your argument is, look, we're leaving to the local county. We're leaving to each county how they want to regulate sand mining. We're leaving to each county what they prioritize as far as conditions for the conditional use permit. Court, we're just asking you to tell the counties what kind of evidence, what level of evidentiary, quasi-evidentiary rule is necessary. But as I'm thinking about all of these things, I'm thinking the concerns are going to be the same, it seems to me, in every county. Everyone's going to be concerned about water quality. Everyone's going to be concerned about air quality. Everyone's going to be concerned about this, pretty much the same thing. And so that brings me back to my question, isn't this something better left to the legislature?
Justice Gableman, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that because, again, I think that there need to be clearer rules announced by this court on how these quasi-judicial bodies address conditional use permit applications, because it affects gas stations, it affects a variety of other uses that have been determined legislatively to be conditional uses. And so this is an issue that comes up again and again and again. And I think that what's helpful and what would be helpful for this court to do in an opinion is to tell these quasi-legislative bodies that they need to understand that there should be, first of all, there need to be clear standards, and that there needs to be an understanding of what level of evidence is required to reach the substantial evidence threshold.
Assume with me, Mr. Van Cleve, and I'm not being rude by interrupting. Assume with me for a moment that a majority of this bench is going to take a very wide and permissive view of what kind of evidence is going to be allowed in at these kinds of hearings. Just assume that for the sake of our conversation. Now let's say the difference between where a gas station goes or where a dry cleaner or where a funeral home is sited, and as you pointed out in the first part of your brief, the significant interest that all citizens of this state have in sand mining. I mean, you pointed out that I wasn't being facetious. I'm trying to be a little humorous, but I wasn't being facetious about the quality of our silica in the sand. That makes it a highly desirable natural resource. It's something that can be harnessed for the economic value of this state. It's something that it seems to me legislators might want to take a look at promoting. And so the whole concept is that there's going to be a reason to standardize the zoning of sand mines, where contrast where to put the local BP or where the local mortuary goes is going to be something that would be more of a local concern.
I understand, but the court has this case in front of it, and then the court has to do something with it, and we think that this is the opportunity to talk about how the conditional use permit rules of decisions should work. And there is one thing I want to clarify here.
Are you done answering his question?
Pardon me?
Are you done answering the question?
Just give me one more minute.
Okay,
I wasn't quite done, Justice Abramson,
okay,
because
good.
I wanted
you
to make the point.
You should answer it, and he gets one more minute that he requests.
Yeah, that's nice, because you never ask any questions, I know. Please go ahead, Mr. Van Cleve.
I'm not saying that the public shouldn't be allowed to speak their minds at conditional use permit hearings. There are required public hearings. They have First Amendment rights to come and speak. What we need is we need to make sure that the bodies that are listening to that evidence understand what their roles are. If a legislative body like the county board is listening to the citizens, they're subject to the vote. They better listen to the citizens, and they can make their policy determinations based on legislative facts. But when you're acting in a quasi-judicial role, it's different. And while the rules of evidence may not apply, there, and while flexibility of evidence is admitted, and so let it all in, but there needs to be some guidance given to these quasi-judicial bodies on what they can and can't consider.
Okay.
What ELUC wants to seize on here, somebody's saying there's going to be 4,000 trucks a day. That's just plain wrong. They limited this operation to 10 truck trips per day. Those types of statements may be cathartic, but they're not substantial evidence.
Is it your position, counsel, that you want us to rule that once all objective standards are met, the permit is issued as a matter of right?
Yes, Justice Bradley.
That's what I thought your position was.
Now, the question that you were asked, you were asked three questions in the order that accepted review. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. One question is, should the court adopt a new doctrine that where a conditional use permit applicant has shown that all conditions and standards, both by ordinance and as devised by the Zoning Committee, have been or will be met, the applicant is entitled to the issuance of the permit. You agree that's a new doctrine?
Yes.
Okay.
In the state of Wisconsin, it would be.
What case law do we have to overrule, or maybe none?
Justice Abramson, I don't know that you have to overrule any case law.
Modify, reinterpret, if you prefer those words.
Edward Kramer, I think that what we're advocating would have the same result, but we don't like the language in that case. And
you don't like
why.
The language of Kramer?
The language in Kramer where the court seems to be rather expansively saying that a public health denial of a conditional use permit based on the public health, safety, and welfare, that's a sufficient standard. But I think if you look at the facts of that case, you see that it's very different. The Baraboo Bluffs were at stake in that case. The Ice Age Trail was at stake in that case. And that's why we're saying that part of the analytical framework here has to be you have to look at the particular proposed project at the particular site that's being proposed. And you have to be able to tie that to those conditional use standards. And that was part of the problem.
Not all
here.
Standards, objective standards. So if it says noise level is so much, that's the standard. If you meet it, it's yours, right?
That's correct, Justice Abramson.
If it's water quality control and you meet that standard and there are numbers in there, it's yours. No discretion if you meet these objective standards. Are there any subjective standards in the conditional use permit?
Here's where subjectivity comes in. These quasi-judicial bodies have the authority to tailor specific conditions to the proposed project at the proposed site. So if there are unique features unique problems or conflicts of use.
Suppose they think the water purity should be a bit different than the one in the objective standard. Can they do that?
They cannot do that.
And
they are bound by the standards.
Okay. So which ones can they change? Which ones can they tailor?
They can tailor, for example, there's a 300-foot shoreline setback under the Trempealeau County ordinances. The ELUC couldn't say, you know what, we're going to make it 1,000 feet. That is a legislative determination. Go to the county board and get it changed if you don't like that setback requirement.
Counsel, your light might come on while I ask the question. If it does, then maybe just answer when you get back up. But I'm curious, it doesn't seem that you have specifically made constitutional arguments, that this is an unconstitutional delegation of authority or that this ordinance is unconstitutional either facially or as applied or any other constitutional claims. I'm curious why not.
because this court told me I couldn't make them. That was one of the issues that we raised in our petition for review, and the court granted review on the three issues that are stated in its order granting the petition. We did raise a constitutional issue, but it is not before this court.
Okay. Now, the third question that you were asked is, did the Trempealeau County Committee exceed its jurisdiction? And that's a certiorari.
Yes,
term,
that's one of the
right.
standards, Your Honor.
By denying a conditional use permit based on generalized concerns, that sounds to me like you're saying subjective here, reflecting the exercise of policy-based quasi-legislative authority, because these guys are appointed, not elected. You still stand by? Suppose they had been elected in this community. Would it change their powers in your estimation?
State statutes establishing zoning committees say they're appointed, Justice Abramson, so I don't think they would be elected.
Well, suppose you have an advisory election, and
well,
then they appoint those that were elected.
I still think the answer is no, Justice Abramson, because they're sitting as a quasi-judicial body.
Okay. So it's nothing to do whether they're elected or appointed.
I think that's part of it, because I think that when you have legislative power, you're elected. And that is the check on whether or not the people, the citizens of that jurisdiction like the kinds of rules that are being promulgated by that legislative body. They don't like those standards. They go to their legislators, the County Board of Supervisors. I see my time's up.
Yeah, well, you can answer when you come back up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. I've had a little bit of problems hearing today. I didn't last time with you, counsel. Your voice carried very well. When you begin, you're a little bit taller than he was. It may be you'll have to move the podium up a little bit. So if you can help check on that just to be sure the sound is good for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I've never been accused of having a soft voice, so
good.
I'll try and keep it up for the court
Very
today.
Very good. Thank you.
My name is Ron Stadler, and I represent the Trempealeau County Environmental Land Use Committee. And we are here today really on a singular issue, and that is certiorari review of the committee's decision to deny All Energy's application for a conditional use permit. All Energy did not file a cause of action seeking a declaratory judgment that Trempealeau County's ordinance was unconstitutional, that the ordinance is contrary to state law, or that it's void in some fashion. So we're not here about challenging whether Trempealeau County's ordinance is valid. The ordinance is valid. What we're here about is whether the certiorari action here can be sustained.
Right, and it seems to me that the basis of Mr. Van Cleve's argument is an evidentiary one, and where do we draw the line when it comes to what are being loosely, I think, bantered about as objective and subjective comments or opinions. And what I mean by that is, when I read through the transcript of the hearing, the summary of the public comments, and then the transcript of the reasons of the five who voted against granting the permit, I thought to myself, okay, well, a lot of these comments are on point, and they're the same concerns I think everyone would have if they heard any kind of mining operation was moving close by. How's this going to affect me? How's it going to affect the air I breathe, the water I drink? but thinking about it in the framework of the argument that Mr. Van Cleve has articulated, I did start to think about, well, where do we draw the line as far as you have the federal government, you've got the county government in a highly regulated setting, and, you know, you have the elected officials of the county saying these are the standards in Chapter 13, read in conjunction with Chapter 10, by which we are going to determine whether an applicant such as All Energy is entitled to the conditional use permit. And then someone like, well, All Energy comes in and spends presumably a lot of money, comes in and fulfills all of these standards and or shows that somehow the facility is going to meet all these standards. And then what if the comments were, I asked myself, what if the comments at the public hearing were not about air quality, water quality? What if they were things more along the lines of, well, I heard that all sand mines, no matter what, no matter how highly regulated, no matter what restrictions are imposed, well, they give everybody within a 100-mile radius cancer. I heard that. And then somehow that got that kind of those kind of arguments were adopted by a majority of the ELUC. And so it basically what I'm saying is reducing it to its perhaps most absurd, but it illustrates the point. What if the counter arguments amounted to nothing more than superstition? Do we still as a court do we say, well, you know, it might not be the decision I would make, but gee, they had their reasons, they articulated them, and so good enough. Is there room for line drawing, and where is it?
Justice Gableman, to answer your question, I don't think there's room for a bright line to be drawn. There has to be a more flexible line that is drawn. And I do agree, your hypothetical is more on the extreme, but I mean, I will grant you that people will come in at public hearings and they will offer testimony about things that perhaps they don't really know about. They will offer things based on speculation, based on conjecture. I would agree with Mr. Van Cleve that when somebody offers up things that are speculation, conjecture, wildly untrue, those things are not substantial evidence that can be the basis of a decision. And the committee, like a trial court judge has to do, needs to sift and winnow through what it hears. And the committee has to say, you know what, we got this kind of testimony, its weight is really over here, it has nothing to do with this case. And we have this other kind of testimony. I don't think there's a bright line. I think, you know, the interesting part of this case is Mr. Van Cleve and his client are really asking the court to say, really tighten in conditional use permits. And this is not about just sand mining. And again, I agree with Mr. Van Cleve on that. This is about conditional use permits for everything in Wisconsin that we're
right.
talking about.
So let's talk about that a little bit. And I'm interested in the breadth and type of discretion that a land use committee can exercise when it's considering a conditional use permit. My question is that discretion limited to identifying the conditions necessary to address the factors that cause that use to be a conditional use as opposed to a permitted use?
I don't think the committee can say we're not going to approve a conditional use permit for sand mining because we don't want sand mining. What the committee has to do is to look at the particular factors. And that's what it's been charged with under the Trempealeau County ordinance.
So, and as it identifies those factors, must it do it with a degree of specificity that we can tell whether or not the applicant has satisfied that condition?
I think there are some objective factors, and again, I agree, that you can do that with, but there are subjective factors that you can't necessarily do that with.
All right, and let's talk about those for a little bit then, because what I'm concerned about is the potential for the exercise of will as opposed to judgment. And as you know, one of the grounds for reversing on certiorari is that the administrative body exercised will as opposed to judgment, right? So in when we're talking about subjective criteria, how are we supposed to determine whether the body has exercised will or judgment?
Because you look at what the committee did, what the administrative body did, and you say, was there a reasonable basis for doing that? And let me give you a great example of this, and this is one that I think All Energy tries to say is objective, but the wetlands issue. There was substantial concern by the committee members about the wetlands issue, and All Energy comes in and says, you know what? We've got unrefuted expert testimony on wetlands. Did they present expert testimony? Sure. They had an expert who came in and said, we've got preliminary approval from the DNR. Okay, last time I checked, you can't go to the bank on preliminary approval. You have to have final approval. And they said the other thing we have is we have wetland mitigation credits. Wetland mitigation credits means that All Energy is coming to Trempealeau County and saying, hey, guys, guess what? We've got great news. We're filling in approximately 2 acres of the wetlands that you value, but don't worry, we're going to remediate 3 acres down in Kenosha County or in Brown County or in Milwaukee County.
Was that a basis for denying the conditional use permit in this case?
That was. That was a concern of two of the committee members was the wetland impact.
Okay, but what did they say would be necessary in order to satisfy them on that issue?
They were concerned that wetlands were being filled.
I understand they were concerned. What did they say would be necessary for All Energy to do to satisfy their concern?
Don't fill the wetlands.
Okay, so did they say come back to us with a different plan that doesn't involve filling the wetlands?
All Energy has had the right for the last 2.5 years to go back to Trempealeau County and submit a new application and address any of the concerns that were raised, and it has not done that.
And do you think perhaps that might be because they don't know from the county what they're supposed to be aiming at to satisfy?
No. I think they would have a better opportunity now. They've gone through a hearing. They've heard the concerns of the public. They've seen and heard the concerns of the committee. They know exactly what those concerns were, and they can address each and every one of those now.
Yeah, well, let's make a distinction between standard and concern.
I didn't hear the last part.
Let's make a distinction between standard and concern. I get concern. As a general, I like wetlands, and I don't want wetlands to go away. That's not a standard. A standard is something that a person can look at and say, I need to do X, Y, and Z to meet that standard. The question is, does Trempealeau County have an obligation to identify the standards that an applicant must meet as opposed to simply expressing concerns and then reserving essentially unbridled discretion to determine whether or not their concerns, not standard, but their concerns are satisfied?
I don't believe a county or any other entity in Wisconsin has an obligation to make every factor absolutely objective. And I would ask the court to go back and read its decision in Weber versus Town of Saukville, where it talked about the fact that conditional use standards often lack specificity since their purpose is to confer a degree of flexibility in the land use regulations. And I love the part where they quote Rathkopf, which is a favorite of All Energy, where they say, if the purposes of zoning are to be accomplished, the master zoning restrictions or standards must be definite, while the provisions pertaining to a conditional use must of necessity be broad and permit an exercise of discretion.
Yes, but I think what Justice Kelly is articulating is the same thought that I occurred in, and taking it from the more extreme, as you politely called it, and back home to what we're talking about. On pages 16 and 17 of the petitioner's brief, they neatly set out the reasons as stated by the five who voted against it. And the first is, I have too many unanswered questions. The second is, I have numerous environmental concerns. Verge, you can add the river constantly floods, changes course. I'm paraphrasing, of course. Third, wetland location is too close to sensitive water and wildlife resource. Four, well, I'm from the Farm Service Agency, and sand mines have a history of boom or bust. Therefore, destroying good productive agricultural land is not a wise decision. We don't want to destroy our potential for, and then he names other outdoor activities. Five, well, we've got public concerns. The siting does not seem to be in the best interests of our citizens. Soil around and in the site bring into question the potential for water problems. So how far out on the ledge of, where does it leave valid rulemaking and enter the land of speculation? And what kind of standards should we articulate to distinguish between the two?
I think the standards to articulate between the two are the standards that we find in the criteria for certiorari review. It's a well-accepted standard, and it has worked for years and years and years. The other point that I think is very critical here is, remember, this is not the committee making these rules or making these standards. The county board has adopted an ordinance.
Sure.
And the ordinance...
13.
Yep, Chapter 13 and Chapter 10.
And 10 is the general.
And they put together all of the things that the committee must consider.
Right.
It must consider water issues. It must consider...
Air quality,
all of those things.
Aesthetic value.
The ordinance, I grant you, the ordinance does not have a lot of objective criteria.
I'm not talking
criteria.
About the ordinance. I'm talking about what Mr. Van Cleve has been arguing to us. And what he grounds his argument on is the idea of expert testimony. He, as he was leaving the podium, he threw out, and what stuck out to me was, we had comments about 4,000 trucks a day. Well, there wasn't going to, I don't remember what the number actually was planned on, but so if they say, if someone just gives the sort of incantation of, I have environmental concerns. Are those the magic words that the county zoning ordinance and the company that applies under the lawful ordinance scheme lives or dies by?
I think what you have to do is to look at the reasons for the denial and look at the record and see if there's a connection between the two. Keep in mind, you know, these are 8 citizens who are appointed to a committee to serve their county. They are not lawyers. They are not judges. They are not necessarily experts in any particular field that's coming before them. They get thrown into a 10-hour hearing where thousands of pages of documents are subjected to them. They get testimony from expert witnesses. They get testimony from factual witnesses. They have to make a decision as to what they want to do at the end, and then they get put on the spot of saying, give us your reasons right now. So I don't know that it's necessarily fair to try and judge the decision-making process by a statement at the end of the hearing where the committee member is asked to state what his or her issues were about. But I think you do go back to those and you say, okay, we have wetland concerns. And you know what? The ordinance says we have to look at water quality issues. Filling wetlands is a water quality issue.
I know that.
Right, but we don't equate concerns with standards, right? A concern may motivate you to inquire into whether a standard has been satisfied, but a concern is not a standard. So if the statement is, I have wetland concerns, and therefore I deny, that is not a match between a standard and evidence. It is somebody exercising will, not judgment. Judgment requires this. We have a standard, and then we have evidence, and we apply one to the other. That's judgment. When we say, I'm not comfortable, I have concerns, that's will. And under the certiorari standard of review, that's not acceptable, right?
And nobody said that here.
Okay. What we do have are statements like, it's going to adversely affect the natural beauty of the area. Okay, well, tell me, how are we, and if that's the basis for denial, it's going to adversely affect the beauty, how are we supposed to look at that and determine whether that is the exercise of will as opposed to judgment?
Because that's a matter of discretion that is left for the committee members.
But it is not unbridled discretion.
It is not. But it's not this court's place, nor the Court of Appeals, nor the trial court's place to come back and say, I agree with that.
But it is our place to look at the evidence and the standard to see if they match.
Natural beauty. How in the world can somebody conclude that there is not substantial evidence to say that this 265-acre mine site will not affect natural beauty? They're going to have a sand pile of 400,000 tons sitting on the property. That's 800 million pounds of sand.
Right, okay.
They're
going to
have a berm.
Yeah, let's stop right there. So we're dealing with a situation where the county's already decided non-metallic mining is a conditional use on this property. Right?
Correct.
Okay. What did they think was going to happen if it got mined?
There are some properties that are appropriate for it, and there are some properties that are not appropriate
Precisely.
For it.
So shouldn't that have been made, that decision be made at the zoning level, not at the conditional use level?
county's already said this is a potentially, as long as you can do this without detracting from health, welfare, and safety, this is an appropriate place to do mining. You already decided that.
Well, scenic beauty is something I can understand, having lived and worked in the northern part of the... Let me just clarify. The one comment that was made about scenic beauty was by committee member Patzner, who said, we don't want to destroy our outdoor recreation potential, like hunting, biking, and other activities that attract visitors, retirees, and people that love scenic beauty. That's the one comment I see in the five about the visual part of this mine.
But the review on certiorari is not limited to the members of the committee's comment at the end. It's in the record. Is there evidence in the record to support that? And each and every one of those committee members was fully capable of recognizing whether this sand mine was going to cause detrimental effect on the scenic beauty.
Council, I want to look at the ordinance. And Chapter 13 is the one that's been referenced by you, I think by your opposing counsel and by members of the bench. It says in 13.01, and is this part of the conditional use permit too, Chapter 13?
Correct.
Okay. So the first provision says, the county shall specifically analyze non-metallic mineral mining proposals, and I assume that the county there must mean the committee.
Correct.
In light of the county's interest in providing for the wise, so that's a standard, use of the natural resources, that's a standard, aesthetic implications of the siting of such a mine, so that's a standard, and the impacts, now we're talking about another standard, of such mining on the general health, safety, and welfare. So those are standards. Then there's another very interesting two sentences. One, each application shall be judged on its own merits. Okay? So that means you have to look at the particular. But the one that was of most interest to me is the last one. Subject only to the standards set forth in this section and in the zoning ordinance as a whole, okay, it is impossible, so it means that I read that to say they've set forth some standards in 13 and zoning ordinances generally, but other than those, it's impossible to prescribe the criteria upon which such a permit may be granted in each and every case. Now, when I read that to mean, okay, we've given you some standards, we've done the best we can, and we've given you some general criteria, and we can't spell out every criteria for every site because they're different. And you have discretion under these broader standards. Now, that's how I read that. Why is my reading bad?
Justice, your reading is not bad.
I didn't think you would be the one that would say that.
It does involve discretion, and I think this court said it very well in Weber versus Town of Saukville. If it was possible for us to prescribe every particular standard about when, where, and how we will allow mining to occur, we would have some phenomenal draftsperson who would have created that for us, and this would be a permitted use.
That person doesn't exist.
Correct. And it's not a permitted use. And Justice Kelly, to go back to your point, yes, sand mining and non-metallic mining is allowed as a conditional use within this zoning district, and this zoning district is all over the county, but it doesn't mean we can have a mine on every acre of E2 agricultural land within the county. Some places we can, some places we can't. The committee is charged with discretion and determining where is a good fit.
To paraphrase the late William F. Buckley, Jr., your questioner has constructed a field of straw men, and you are now busily setting them ablaze. I don't think anybody is arguing that. I think what we're questioning is, at what point does the mere incantation of a concern for a potential consequence become so speculative that it cannot represent, it has to be representative of a will and not of a judgment. And that's what we're here. Now, you, before Justice Abrahamson interposed her question, and you were about to say that the reasons given by the five were not the only things that this court needed to take into consideration when performing the certiorari process. What else should we be taking into consideration?
The record as a whole. And are there facts in the record to support...
What are you pointing us to?
What am I pointing to?
Yes.
Well, when we talk about issues such as changes in the topography, okay, you go and you say, okay, is there anything in the record to support changes in topography? They're going to come in and strip 60, 65 acres at a time and mine it. People oftentimes have a misconception that sand mining is kind of like going to a sandbox and you scoop up sand.
The reason we look at the record is to determine whether there is support or not for the judgment of the decision makers.
We don't
search the record to independently make the determination whether the judgment was reasonable.
And when somebody says they have a concern that the natural scenic beauty is going to be changed, and you have a site where 65 acres is going to be stripped open, sand mining is not the process of scooping up sand from a sandbox. It is taking sandstone by blasting it out of the ground, crushing it, washing it, rinsing it.
Yes,
and it changes everything on that property.
And the county knew that when it made it a conditional use.
Correct. And in some places, that can be acceptable. And in some places, it may not be acceptable.
You said the county said it's potentially acceptable on this property.
It said it is potentially, if you look at these factors and say, under these factors, is there a reason why we wouldn't want mining here? Do we want a sand mine next to a Class A trout stream?
Are you sure that's your scope of discretion? What? Are you sure that's the scope of your discretion to decide whether or not you want to mine there? Isn't the scope of your discretion, can we build a set of conditions that would allow for a mine to operate here without adverse consequences, which we will now list, right? Isn't that the scope of your discretion?
The ordinance specifically charges the committee with looking at the public health, welfare, and interests of the county and says, look at these criteria and determine if this is a suitable location for this whatever it is, and this is not unique to sand mines or non-metallic mines, but conditional uses, is this a place where we should be doing this?
Did I mishear earlier, or had the county set the setback distance from the water stream, or from the river?
I believe there's a 300-foot setback.
That's what I thought I heard. And was there any evidence in the record to indicate that the mine was going to be constructed closer than 300 feet?
No.
Well, then how do we get to the idea that a member of the committee can say, well, I have concerns about the pollution of the stream, when the county has already said if it's built 300 feet, the runoff question is going to be ameliorated.
There are a host of issues like that, though. And keep in mind, case law, Clark versus Waupaca County, if any one of the reasons that the committee relied on is valid, its decision is valid. I'll give you the wetlands on that. The county had every right in the world to say, you know what, I understand that sand mining here can be done as a conditional use, but you're filling in our wetlands and we don't want you to fill in the wetlands. There's nothing invalid about that determination. One of the requirements in the conditions that were approved was that the rocks and other debris generated by the blasting that were falling onto the neighbor's property would have to be picked up by All Energy. The county, the committee rather, is absolutely within its right to be concerned about that.
I saw the requirement in 13 about the roadway. The roadway had to be cleaned at the end of every workday. I didn't see anything about it.
This is in the list of 37 conditions that were talked about before the permit was voted upon. That when rocks and other debris are blasted out of the site and land on the neighbor's property, All Energy has to clean it up. The committee can certainly be concerned about something like that.
Well, sure, and you identified a condition that would address that concern, correct?
How does that address the concern? I'm not necessarily concerned about who's going to pick it up. I'm concerned about standing on my property and having rocks falling on my head.
Well, then if that was a concern, then the Land Use Committee could say one condition is that you don't blast in such a way that it intrudes on other people's
property. Well, in fact, Chapter 13 said they have to give 24 hours notice to the adjoining neighbors for blasting.
So does that mean I have to get off my property for 24 hours because it's going to be raining rocks?
Sir, I'm not the one who wrote the ordinance. Apparently,
that's
how the good people of Trempealeau County wanted to address the concern.
Right.
Yes.
Go ahead.
That wasn't a question.
Would you?
Go ahead. This is certiorari review, no declaratory judgment. So we're in a very narrow atmosphere of judicial review. And you have the limitations and the requirements for cert review. But then you superimpose upon that additional requirements. One is, what is our standard of review for cert review? And it is, with regard to the evidence question, whether or not there is substantial evidence. I understand our case law says this is a very deferential review, insert review. What does substantial evidence mean?
I think substantial evidence means the same thing as when we're in a trial, that there has to be evidence that you can look at and valid evidence that weighs in favor. It's got to get you into that balancing test of saying, some that weighs for, some that weighs against.
It could be. I think the actual test is whether substantial evidence is evidence of such convincing power, as you indicate, that a reasonable person could reach the same decision.
Right.
As substantial evidence test, it is highly deferential to the board's findings. We may not say so. It isn't just a balancing. It isn't a preponderance of evidence. It is whether, according to our case law, any reasonable person could reach the same decision. Is that
right? That is correct. I see my time is up, so thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Thank you.
You're in the process of finishing my question, counsel.
Could you remind me what that question is, Justice
Abramson?
No, okay.
I can't. That's
good
the
answer.
Problem with doing that. But you agree that that's the definition of substantial evidence that Justice Bradley read?
That's part of the definition of it, but there are many other aspects as well.
Like what?
Substantial evidence is not uncorroborated hearsay.
Do you have a case that says that?
Yes, Oneida 7 says that. Gahan says that.
Pardon me?
Oneida 7.
Oneida 7 says that. That's the most recent court recognition by this court of that. Gahan, G-E-H-I-N, from 2005. Folding Furniture from 1939. That has been the law since 1939 in this state.
Counsel, based on Chapter 13, Chapter 10 ordinances, and what the Land Use Committee has told you so far, do you know how to construct an application that they would accept?
We do not, and that's the problem. The standards they are relying on, we don't know what they are. We don't know how they're going to apply them. They didn't provide us with any guidance whatsoever in those on-the-record statements. And by the way, that's all we have. Their own ordinance says they were supposed to issue a written decision, but everybody from the beginning of this case has been looking to those on-the-record statements by those five dissenters as the basis for why they denied the permit. That's a problem.
And in your brief, were those statements reproduced in their totality?
Yes, they were. They were verbatim from the minutes of the public hearing.
Is it your understanding of the law that if a conditional use permit is denied, that there is an obligation for the committee to advise the condition, to advise what has to be done in order for to enable you to come back and have met those conditions? I mean, I don't know that law, but I hear that being implicit in some of the questions, and I just don't know that as being the law. It could be, but the cases that I have read, that hasn't been discussed.
Your Honor, I think that it is a fair expectation, if you're going to be relying on subjective standards, that you do have to articulate what about affecting aesthetics. And by the way, if we've got a legislative decision that a mine can be operated in a certain district, obviously the county board has considered that and said, well, in the interest of public health, safety, and welfare, because of the need of this very valuable natural resource, we're going to allow it in this district. And let's not forget that the obligation of the mining operator is to reclaim the land and restore it back to its original condition.
Counsel, am I correct in my understanding that the statement from the DNR and the credits you have were not presented to the committee because you obtained them after the hearing?
That's not correct, Your Honor. Before the application was even submitted to the county, there was a preliminary meeting with the all energy experts and both the DNR and the Army Corps of Engineers. And they said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to mitigate wetlands that we're going to disturb. And the Army Corps of Engineers, and this is on the record statements at the hearing, on the Army Corps and the DNR both said they gave preliminary favorable determinations. Clearly, permits would have to be obtained. And so it couldn't be that All Energy could just go out and, even if this CUP were granted, do what it wanted to do until it obtained DNR and Corps of Engineers permits.
Okay, so there really weren't then any credits submitted to the committee? I was interested in that.
Yes,
credits.
There were credits. I'm sorry, I didn't. Yes. You asked that part of the question and I ignored it, but they had arranged for 2.65 replacement credits for the 1.6 acres that they were going to fill. And I'd like to point out that the record shows that those wetlands, the wetland that they were going to disturb, was already compromised. They were being farmed. And so the integrity of the wetlands and also the protection of the waterway was actually going to improve under this plan, because the farming that was taking place there now was having a negative impact on the stream. And
thank
I see
you.
My time is up.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both for a very, very interesting case and probably one of the more complicated conditional use permit arguments that has been presented, at least since I've been here on the court. So thank you very much. We are